He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
I want to pose the first topic with Jay on the line because I want his take after I finish saying the following. I've been looking at things like going along Interstate 95 where you have major gas stops right along the highway and you can get off and get your fuel and all that and get back on in no time at all. And it came to my head at some point in the last week or so that I see an electric traffic charging jam ahead. And I would suspect Jay probably has a possible solution in his head when I get through with this, but it occurs to me that when electric cars really start taking over the roadways, especially in interstate travel, that there may be, unless there are enough charging portals at each of these stops, there could be an electric car traffic jam at these charging stations if electric cars become as prevalent as they're bound to become. Because unless quick charging is really going to be the name of the game, and quick charging to me is anything under 10 minutes of charge to get you to go at least 200 miles, if not more, to the next charging requirement, we're going to see more electric cars in these places than there are portals to hook up to at the same time. Jay, comment.
I think you're right. It's going to probably get worse before it gets better. A few months ago, I was thinking about just that. Going, I was at JFK. JFK has a travel plaza, kind of where all of the freight terminals are, kind of in the middle of the airport in no man's land, and where the general public usually doesn't go. And it's basically where all the limo drivers go, the taxis, and there is a Tesla charging station. And there was a line of people waiting to get a charge on their Teslas. And there were
really?
A
so you
guys.
Actually saw a line?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was like four or five cars, but four or five cars, if each one of them stays 15 or 20 minutes in a charging station. And
yeah, that's a commitment.
Yeah. Well,
how many charging portals were there at that station? Because, as you know, in Stop and Shop in Canaan, there are, I think it's six or eight Tesla charging portals. I'll call them portals, okay? Hookups.
On the other hand, within a mile of there, there is what they call a cell phone parking lot that you have around all airports nowadays.
Right.
And there are, I would say, a dozen charging stations that are not just Tesla, that are, I forget the name of the company.
I know, I do too, but I've seen them as well now. They're starting to pop
up
visually.
And of the dozen, three or four are compatible with Tesla. And the last times I've been there, and the traffic and the parking lot fairly full with, again, a lot of livery drivers, Uber and the lot, I would say there are three or four cars getting charged, and mostly cabs or livery cars. So, by the way, there is a trend. Even those people who drive all day are getting electric cars, and
right.
That station is never fully used. So, I think it's going to be hit or miss, and in the future, you're going to see, we're going to see more charging stations, and we're going to see some that are going to be where there will be lines and others that will not. The advantage of driving a Tesla is
the question that comes to mind, Jay, as you obviously know, it's bound to come to mind, is this going to become a a known problem, or are we going to be able to see? I mean, I don't know what you think you need. These gas pumps, they're like 12 or 14, like, gas pumps at some of these roadside stops, which... Or maybe there are more. I'm not sure. Usually, you can park on either side of them, so that each
well, let's
has
put it
two
this
hoses.
Way. If you've been used to driving on the New Jersey Turnpike or anywhere in New Jersey and waiting for gas at a gas pump in New Jersey, you'll be well prepared to wait for an electric charge.
if the electric charge is going to be, as I said, stated at the beginning of this topic, allow fast enough charging so that you're not waiting 20 or 30 minutes to get to the pump behind one person, as opposed to being in a line of four cars, versus maybe 10 minutes or less.
You know, I see, at a gas pump.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I see, but I see. I don't know. I think you know more charging.
They're going to come. I understand that, but there are a lot more cars on the road than there are charging stations and/or gas pumps. And with the range anxiety factor readily in hand in a lot of people's heads, and this still exists on the street, by the way, and I'm sure you agree, there's already a resistance to. There's a certain population of people out there that are just not going to take on an electric car in their lives. Because they just can't believe that it's going to be as convenient as the gas, the fossil fuel vehicle, okay? And I don't think we need to belabor this any further in this conversation unless you've got a major objection to my statements. So that's that on that topic, unless you want to continue it.
No, that's fine.
Next topic I have in my mind is, because I'm driving a car with such a radio, is automatic station-seeking radios. To me, they've got big drawbacks, and here's the reason. Many cars are not coming through with knobs to manually dial in your stations up and down the dial on FM brand and FM and even XM radio bands. I'm driving an A5, and I have been for the last several days, which is a wonderful car, by the way, in my opinion. It's an Audi, one of the Audis, but the radios are probably similar in all the models. But I come up between New Canaan and Sharon on a daily basis, where we are in a rural area up here, so there are not many strong stations that come in our northwest corner. And to get a radio station on the current Audi radio system in the car that I'm driving, you push on a radio thing, and up pop the stations that the radio has pulled in at the moment you set the band you want to listen to. Now, XM radio is not a difficult band to get everything all at once if you subscribe to XM radio, but FM and or AM are still used by a lot of people, including yours truly here, and listening to a radio station that only has limited transmission distance before it fades out into static and you've got to go to another station to get either the same program going on a similar station like NPR. Up and down this 64-mile route that I travel is a darn nuisance because you cannot manually go to the bands you know that the NPR is transmitting on between Sharon, Connecticut, and New Canaan. And you push on that, the Audi radio shows the band you're listening to, and then it has a thing, a moniker below saying list, and you punch it up, and five radio stations or four or less show up as being the options for you to go to, none of which may be the radio band you want to get to, and you can't get to it pushing the arrow buttons, which on the screen, which go right for up and left to down, because the radio has not picked up those lesser powerful bands, which I can get on, for example, my Jeep Cherokee, because it's got a knob and I know where all the bands are, and I can get them where the first one fades out and the second one comes in. And I don't know how many cars are going away from knobs, but I think, Jay, you drive a lot of cars. I don't know whether the BMWs have still got knobs. Mercedes
Let me ask you, because I drive a few cars, but this particular A5, which is a new car, right?
Yes, it's a 2021.
It have a dial, a knob at all?
Nope. Yes, it has a volume knob on the center console with the on-off button. The rest of it's all on a screen.
What is that called, their controller?
It doesn't have the MMI. It doesn't have an MMI anymore, which is a blessing.
Oh, okay. Well,
so you don't get the A5 Cabriolet does have an MMI button, and you have four corners, as you probably have seen in an MI one, where you push radio, navigation, whatever else you want to get to.
And that works pretty damn well.
And that Audi also has a radio, automatic station-seeking radio, and it does not have a knob to, but it does have favorites if you own the car. This is a loaner car that I'm driving, so I don't have any. I haven't been able to program the radio to my liking to get all the favorite stations in there. And I don't know whether I can save faded stations that I pick up in Sharon but can't pick up in New Canaan or not with this. But using it as a guest, which is what I am doing as the owner of the Audi dealer's loaner program, doesn't give me the ability to knob tune a radio. And so you can look forward to that, but that's a problem that anybody who drives a lot might find annoying.
I think the bigger issue that we have is with cars becoming more and more complex. It just takes time to get to know all of the functions of the car. And I keep saying I'm sure that most people with a lot of new sophisticated cars that we see around here have no idea, don't use 10% of the functions that are available to them.
And you're absolutely correct.
But, you know, that's the way it is. I think it just takes time to learn the system.
No kidding. But to that end, if you have a loaner car for a day or two or three, and you're not really a car guru or an electronics guru, you're not going to get to know this particular situation. But beyond that, you are so correct in the electronics and all that. The other thing that's sort of interesting for a short-term user is that, for example, on this Audi, the cruise control lever on many of the new Audis is down low to the left of the steering wheel below the high-low beam and turn signal lever. And on my Jeep, cruise control is on the steering wheel for setting it and all that, and the buttons are on the right. And on another car I have, my Hyundai Sonata, the cruise control is on a lever on the right. And so we go back to, I have said this maybe before you came on, Jay, but you agree. It's interesting that there's no conformity in location of knobs and levers for the driver to have between different makes of cars that he or she may have in their driveway.
Like when we had the high beam on-off on the left side, on the left.
That is common in every car.
Is it?
Left lever, the lever for high beam.
No, I'm talking about the push button on the floor.
Oh, I wish that would come back. I would love to see that come back. You have a Starbucks coffee or Dunkin' coffee or any coffee in your left hand. You got your hand on the right hand on the steering wheel. And then you got to go to do your high or low beams if you don't have automatic high or low beams, which is how
well, that is
to
the
have.
Solution and the way to go these days.
A floor button would be a wonderful accessory to come make its way back into let's say, lower-level cars, if not all cars.
That's
a good rant for this show. And I'll bet there are people out there listening that probably would agree if they even wondered, because I can't sometimes get to the lever or even the turn signal, I don't have my left hand full of a drink all the time, but I know people do. And
on a serious note, these new auto dimmers are the way to go, and they work.
They are not the way to go.
Well, on new cars,
I didn't realize this had it on this car.
If you have a new car, make sure you have the lights switch on full auto, and have and usually for that you push the. Your left hand, usually it's the left hand, right lever, forward to put the lights on high beam, and they will adjust automatically. And
that is true. I noted that mine...
You second-guess the system for a little bit, but then you get used to it very quickly, and it works extremely well.
Well, it works extremely well, except I noted on this car last evening that when a cars were approaching me, coming around a corner with low beams on, the high beam, the automatic high beam did not activate as quickly as I did. I beat it a couple of times with my hand on the dimmer, the manual stalk, because I wasn't happy with it. It went, and Audi high beams now. These electronic headlights they're wonderful headlights. Boy, they really light up the road on high beams, and that means you want to have them go dim if you're coming at another car, and or the car's coming at you. And I passed some cars last night that had high beams on, and if they had automatic high beams, they didn't work at all, and they were blinding, to say the least. But the automatic stuff is getting better, I will grant you. They're much better than the early versions of this same thing, which were way back decades ago in some cases, and were very slow to respond, especially from cars that were higher or further away coming at you before they would go to dim automatically.
Hey, the other thing, Robin, now that you're back to driving luxury cars again,
it's going to end.
How's your experience with dealerships and you mentioned something about cost of luxury cars.
Yeah, well, let's hear. I have this Audi because my convertible is there for a 10,000 mile service, and the bill came in this morning, and I gulped. It came in, and it is a total of $435.82 for a 10,000 mile inspection, including oil filter, washer, plugs, 48 units of something, which I'm going to find out what it is when I go in, that is 75 cents each, was $36. I don't know what 48 units can be. What?
Air in the tires?
It better not be. I hope they don't put nitrogen in it. Synthetic oil. But the labor was $296 of this bill, and the labor rate is $148 an hour for this particular Audi dealer. And I know the same is true at BMWs and Mercedes. They are at 100 plus or minus in most of, let's say, Jeep dealerships, Chevy dealerships, and Ford dealerships. So they haven't gotten up to the European labor rates yet. But I just was sort of blown away. It's one of the reasons that I probably shy away from being a luxury car owner the way I used to be 40 years ago.
Well, there's a good point, but
the rhetorical answer is, well, if you can afford to buy the car, you can afford to maintain it. Sort of like real estate, you know. If you can afford to buy a $4 million place, you can afford to run it, right?
That's the answer
you get. But it's still a little bit of a shocker when I've been driving Jeeps for a long time, and my oil changes have been $69.95 or thereabouts, including a free safety inspection and stuff. So there we go. Segue right into that topic very nicely, because that was on the list that I had made up for this show, and I wanted to bring that point up.
Yeah, and I think it's commonly known that parts are, you know, more expensive than on more generic brands as well.
Yeah,
That's the cost
of enjoying a great car, and this Audi is a great car. I love the driver select situation, which has, I discussed this, I think, a couple of weeks ago, Jay, you may or may not have been the show, with the driver select, which you can apparently set your own driver selections for steering effort, accelerator, yeah, response effort, and all that, but they also have automatic, which sets the car between all the other two preset units, which is sport or dynamic, I guess it is, and comfort. And I think all the Audis are coming through with this feature. And it's very easy to set it up.
Let's do a quick run through what's happening in our e-world, seeing the advent of more and more electric cars. We talk more and more about that part of the industry.
Right.
So I was reading about Tesla deliveries.
Aren't they wonderful?
Cases,
what do they say, 6 out of 8 or 3 out of...
It varies, and some of it doesn't make any sense or not much sense. Like, if you order a Tesla Y, which is their best-selling vehicle right now, right? Their mid-size SUV that goes for $50,000-$60,000.
Yep.
Well, the delivery right now is April of next year,
right,
which is, you know, kind of not too far away. If you order it with the optional 20-inch wheels, if you order it with the standard 19-inch wheels, you have to wait until July or August.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
I think, is just a conscious decision on the part of Tesla to prioritize, you know, what they actually want you to buy. Because I don't think, and I may be wrong, maybe the standard wheels are harder to find, but I have no idea. Is there a supply shortage for smaller tires or the rims?
Well, Jay, you bring up an interesting concept, because several weeks or maybe a couple of months ago, I brought up the whole topic because a tire shortage was on the horizon of somebody's news blip about shortage of you know, chips and everything else, and there might be a rubber shortage and all that. I don't know, but you know, I don't like to buy the larger tires.
Well,
because
and
they have
and
less rubber between the wheel rims and the tire.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot of times, and we'll keep talking about it because we agree on that. It's a good point. Those optional larger tires cost a lot more money. Like in the case of Tesla, to go up 1 inch or 2 inches, you're paying $2,000. There's no way that's not in proportion with the cost of wheels or tires.
That's true.
Also, Tesla is very clear about the range you get with those
bigger tires,
larger diameter tires, and larger tires. Your range is decreased by somewhere around 10%, which goes back to, I mean, it's, you know, you drive a gas car, it's the same thing. You put bigger tires on, you're going to burn more fuel. Is it necessary? In often a lot of cases, I think not, and I think we agree on that.
So. Yeah, we do agree on that.
Yeah. Other things in the electric world, Rivian, which is, you know, coming on, is going public shortly. Ford had a seat on their board and no longer has, and the company is expected to go public, I don't know when, soon, and with an anticipated valuation of around $80 billion. So I think Rivian is going to do well.
I think they have
great products on the horizon. A lot of pickup trucks coming out next year.
Conversely, the Tesla truck has been put on hold, production-wise, without defining exactly what the problems are. But they're not going to come out now. I believe production won't start till well into 2022. And I can't remember where I read the article, but it was a couple of days ago. And I don't know what the problem is, but I sit there and look at that truck every time they show a picture of it. And this was a picture of it from the rear, where you could see the pickup bed and all that.
I think the Cybertruck could be Tesla's first
boondoggle.
First what?
Boondoggle.
Yes. What the competition is coming out with, you know, Rivian, GM, Ford are coming out with fantastic electric trucks.
They sure are.
I think the Cybertruck was a great marketing product, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when they announced it. I think it's already old. I think it. I just don't see it happening the way it was presented
to
us.
Enough said on that, I think. I was looking at the Model Y, Model 3 blurb to go back to the Tesla sales thing, and they're dominating EV registrations, as we mentioned. It says more than 5 out of every 8 electric vehicles registered in the U.S. this year through August were Tesla Model Y crossovers or Model 3 sedans. Impressive for the moment. It'll be interesting to see if they hold their own as more electric vehicles come online from the other manufacturers at prices at or possibly below the Teslas. They just Elon just raised the prices a couple of $1,000s on a couple of models each,
so
I think.
Have you seen the new luxury SUV coming out in Norway, which we know is always at the at the forefront of electric vehicle sales?
No, I have not.
So the Hongqi. Hongqi, yes. It's a Chinese manufacturer, another one, that's been around for decades. Luxury car manufacturer.
Not much in the news, though, right?
Means red flag in Mandarin. And a few years ago, I guess they hired the designer, and I forget his name, who designed a few cars for Rolls-Royce. And if you look at the Hongqi SUV, it looks pretty much exactly like a Rolls-Royce Cullinan, you know, the big Rolls-Royce SUV.
Okay.
It's a massive brick. It looks very impressive. And it's going to sell in Europe, in Norway, where they're starting to sell it at the end of the year, at prices between, if I recall, between the high 70s and $90,000.
Wow.
Or the equivalent of. So it's a high-end vehicle. It'll be interesting to see how it does on the European markets.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.